Blog Talk Radio.
So we're live.
I look upon this land and I don't like what I see. There are too many factories doing poison at me. I can't see the sky, I can't feel the earth when there's concrete in my way. Well, they came 500 years ago when they took our land away. And my heart beats to a native drum. And my heart beats.
Time to tell the truth about the east and west world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the community Q&A with Talking Trees. The song that you just heard was Native Drum by Linda Craig from her album Spirit of the Wind. So I'd like to take a quick moment to thank everyone for being here with us today. It's a very, very exciting time for all of us. We've been spending quite a lot of time and energy putting together the information that we're going to share with everyone today. We know that there's a lot of people that have been following this for a long time, and we feel very humbled and honored with that. And we received a lot of really, really amazing questions from people, so we're very excited to go over that with everyone today. I just want to give a little bit of information with respect to how the show is going to operate today. So we are going to be leading with a brief introduction of the team members that we will have with us on air today. We're going to be talking about what we've been working on, providing a little bit of information, and then we're going to go through the list of questions that we've received thus far from the people who've been kind enough to submit those. And then we're going to open the phone lines to take live calls. So if anyone is attempting to call into the show at this point in time, unfortunately, we won't be fielding calls just yet. So I'm going to ask that everybody be patient. As far as contacting us by telephone is concerned, the guest call-in number for the show is area code 646-668-8526. The number again, 646-668-8526. And that's posted on our page on Blog Talk Radio. If you're listening to this now, you're already there. So you just have to have a look on the screen and you'll see the contact number. So without further ado, I'm going to take a few minutes to introduce the team members that will be with us here on air today. I do want to mention that we have almost all of our team members present with us here and a lot of other people that are supporting and have been supporting what we've been working on for so long. So I'm going to lead off with an introduction. We have David Craig with us. David is the original founder of Talking Trees, and he is our Earthship expert. So I just want to thank David for being on the call today.
Thank you very much, Steve.
We also have with us Chris Gauthier. Chris is our highly energetic inspiration and keeps us in pursuit of our path at all times with his constant motivation and high energy. Chris, along with his partner Ashlyn, own New Life Tie-Dye, which is a tie-dye company that upcycles clothing. And I would definitely encourage you guys to take a look at the beautiful stuff that they create, because it's really quite amazing. Chris is on the call with us today as well.
Thank you for the beautiful presentation. Very excited to be here again, and excited to share details about what we're doing. Very exciting day today.
Indeed. And last, my name is Steve Richardson. I will be the, I guess, quote unquote, host for today's call. If anyone is interested, we had another radio show roughly a year ago. So once this broadcast is completed, if you'd like to take the time to go back and listen to that broadcast, it is posted on our page here on Blog Talk Radio, and it is accessible for you to listen to at any point in time. It's nearly a two-hour program, just so that you know. This program is also slated to be a two-hour program, and based on what we've been receiving so far, I'm kind of curious to see if 2 hours is going to be enough to address all of the information and all of the questions that we receive from everybody. And again, thank you so, so much for submitting all of those. What we're embarking on here is the manifestation of a dream, a vision that has been collectively evolving over quite some time. And I have to say, personally, I feel very blessed and very honored to be fortunate enough to have this in my experience at this time. And that being said, I know that everyone who's listening is listening because they also have a dream. And in one way or another, we've all been collectively led to this moment in time in order to connect and share and ask questions and to learn and grow together. So at this time, I would like to encourage everybody to just take a quick moment. And if you are able to, wherever you are, I'd like you to close your eyes. And I want you to bring up the vision, whatever the vision is for you, whatever the dream is for you, whatever it is for each individual person. We'd like to take the energy of this and collectively align it in the direction of what it is that we're sharing with the world at this time. Just take a moment to imagine yourself sitting in a beautiful forest with beautiful trees, with the wind softly blowing, beautiful blue skies, glistening water, lakes and streams and rivers, standing among a community of beautifully built earthship homes. And around you, you see so many other people, other community members, all collectively sharing their passions, their talents, and their gifts in a place where we're all collectively contributing towards our community, our own self-sustainability, our own world. Just to let that settle in for a moment, see yourself there. We're broadcasting the dream into the future. And as I said a moment ago, I feel very fortunate to be able to sit here and feel that this thing that was a dream for myself and for so many other people is now becoming a reality. And what it tells me is that the adage, thoughts become things, is really a true thing. It all begins with an idea. And it's the manifestation of this idea that we're sharing with you today. So thank you again for being on the call, and we're going to roll right into it. Before we do that, as I said, we have a lot of team members who are here with us today. And there's some people that have supported this project who are not able to be here with us today. And I just, again, want to extend thanks and gratitude to all of those people who have worked so hard, either in the foreground or in behind the scenes, in order to make this a reality. So thank you so much for that. So let's go over what we're going to talk about a little bit today, or a lot of it. We're going to be starting off today's program with, I guess, a little bit of background for those of you who are not familiar with Talking Trees, who are not familiar with the project itself, the idea of the project. We recently, as all of you are aware, we recently made an announcement on Facebook that we were moving forward with the ability for us to be able to begin offering lot shares to people who are interested in living in this community. And we had a lot of questions about how not only that aspect of it is going to work, but how the community itself is going to work. So we're definitely going to take some time to discuss and explain those topics and provide some information. And before we do that, I think it would be really beneficial to take a little bit of time and maybe reminisce and talk a bit about how we got here. I won't tell my story just yet because it doesn't reach quite as far back into the past as David's story does. So if David's comfortable, I'd like to take a quick minute and just tell us how all of this started for you.
Thanks, Steve. I guess it started when I was born, but it, if we're going to get more specific to the point and keep the show closer to 2 hours, I would say I had been building houses, for conventional houses, for 15 years. And my beautiful, wonderful mother told me about a documentary, Garbage Warrior, which I watched with her about 7 or 8 years ago. And since that time, my focus has completely shifted to these buildings, the Earthship with the Six Principles. It was about a year later my first son was born, and when my first son was born, I knew I wanted him to grow up in the world I dreamed of, not the one that was presented at the time he was born. So since then, I've had another son born, and they are my constant driving force, my inspiration for creating the type of life that I actually believe I want to live on this plane, on this planet. And here we are, 7 years later, not just me sitting alone watching Garbage Warrior anymore, surrounded by a group of people at this table, and like Steve said, so many other people that can't be present here today. And it's really, truly an honor to be here speaking right now.
Thank you so much, David, for sharing that with us. Chris, would you like to take a few minutes and kind of bring everybody up to speed on how you arrived here at this moment?
Oh, yes, that would be fun for sure. So I guess at the time, I guess it all started when I was born too, that's the thing. But like, we all cut the story short. So after my schooling years, I needed to get a job, you know, like the system is telling people to do. So I did. So I just did some professional study doing maintenance job, and I found a job maintenance in the hospital. Then I worked there for a couple of years, realizing that it was not exactly my passion. It was not exactly following my bliss. I was not really helping humanity as a whole. I was just being a peon in the system, helping the system be maintained ultimately. So then I started to go to music festival. There I met my partner, Ashlyn. And then together we started New Life Tie-Dye, basically an upcycle clothing company where we upcycle old clothing and give it a new life by adding color and doing different things to it, like prints and whatnot, so they are beautiful shirts after that and they're ready to be back on the market. So after we started that, I was still working in the system and I was really wondering, why? What was I doing there? What's the higher purpose? And realizing that I guess humanity I guess the society here as we know it is not really helping nature and is not in balance with nature at all. So I started looking around, looking for different groups, you know, stumbling upon different ideas here and there. And then I stumbled upon contributionism and talking trees, doing earthships. So, and then I dig deeper into the earthship, realizing that it came from like New Mexico and like Michael Reynolds, and I was like, okay, well, what's that about? Is that working in Canada? So I went to see that guy because I was full of questions. So I went to see David on the side of the eye with my partner, and then we got there and I was really literally mind blown by the concept that they were bringing together. The contribution-based system along with earthship, along with permaculture, bringing a balance to living and living with nature. So from that day, my purpose has shifted. I was like, I need to be part of that movement. I need to be part of that group. I need to be in a movement that is in balance with nature and that will inspire other to be in balance as well. So yeah, that's how I got there, man. That's a summary of my path, but it's a path of passion, I guess, and that's all about following your passion.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Chris. Well, I'll quickly share the story of how how we got here. For several years, my partner and I, Diana, were discussing the idea that we didn't really want to be in the system, as Chris said. We weren't really aligned with the place that we were in our lives. And it was the conventional story, you know, go out, get a job, get a house, buy a car, da 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 da. And, you know, as we pursued this path, there was always just something that was kind of missing for us. And we started to realize that perhaps there was a better way. And similarly to David, we watched the documentary Garbage Warrior with Michael Reynolds, and this was our first introduction into earthships and into sustainable living, and you know, it really just opened up this realm of possibility for us. And we started toying around with a few different things after that. You know, we set up a small scale aquaponics system in our basement, and we started working on, you know, creative ways to recycle things like pop bottles to grow food in our windows in our home, and you know, different small projects like this. And we quickly realized that there was the ability for us to be able to do this on a much grander scale and in a way that our hearts really aligned with was available to us. And, you know, for a while we were considering going out and buying a, you know, 100-acre or 200-acre parcel of land and starting something ourselves. And one of the biggest things that we realized right away is that in order to be able to do this and to be able to do this effectively and create the kind of life that we all desire to live, it's just something that simply can't be done alone. And as Chris said, we started looking around for different groups that were sort of aligned with the same ideals that we had at that time. And we attended meetings with groups like Prepare for Change, and we met lots of amazing people. And it was through our pursuit of that that we discovered the Ubuntu movement and contributionism, as Chris said, and quickly realized this is something that we really feel can work. And so we were working together on a lot of different things with the Ubuntu Canada group. And once we had the opportunity, it was through Ubuntu Canada when Diana and I joined that we actually met David initially. And once we learned what the vision was and we saw how everything that David had been working on for so long dovetailed completely into the idea of a contribution-based system, we were hooked, I guess, at that point in time. So we joined the team, and that was also where we met Chris and Ashlyn, and we just put our hearts and our souls into the pursuit of our dream. And at this point in time, like I said, I'm very honored and very humbled, and I have so much appreciation and gratitude to be sitting here in this moment, speaking with all of you today and sharing this information. So thank you again, gentlemen, for sharing your stories. I'm going to take a moment to talk about the Talking Trees Investments, which is a corporation that some of you have seen through the information that we've been posting. As if you read the brief write-up on this page when you came to view the show, you'll see there that it indicates, you know, over the last 10 months we've been working to create this special corporation. And so I'm going to backtrack a little bit. And for those of you who go back and listen to the radio show that we did roughly a year ago, you'll hear in that program that we're speaking about this same idea. And when we were considering it back at that time, you know, we were anticipating being able to have the community underway in the spring of 2018, only to find out that what we were trying to do hasn't been done in the way that we're doing it before. So after the first meeting with our lawyer and after laying everything out, she just looked at us and said, "I have no idea how you're going to do this because I don't know anybody who's ever done it before." So we left it with her, and she continued to work on it for us very, very hard, came up with a lot of different ideas and consulted with a lot of colleagues of hers in the industry, everyone from Bay Street lawyers to not-for-profit lawyers, and you've got banking lawyers and so on, everybody that she could connect with to share this idea with them and sort of find out, like, guys, why isn't this being done and how can it be done? So it's taken this long to reach this stage of the game. So what I'm going to do now is give just a brief overview of how the process works with respect to the corporation. So the first thing that I'll say is at this point in time, no one is buying land, okay? And Talking Trees does not own any property. So we are not selling land, with the exception of the lot on Highway 7. So we have a beautiful 1.5 acre, 1.3 acre lot on Highway 7, which is where we've kind of been stationed over the last year and a bit, working on putting the final touches of this together. And that's going to be a thing as well. So you can find more information about the model home, and that's on the Talking Trees website, which is talkingtrees.love. Yes, .love. So as far as the land for the community is concerned, one of the questions we get continuously, do you own any land? No, we don't own any land, and we're not selling land. So it's very, very important as we proceed through this discussion that everybody understands that at this stage of the game, we are not selling land. And this was the biggest challenge that we had, and this is how the idea came to pass. So if we go back to the summer of 2017, we were receiving messages and questions from so many people who were interested in the information that we were putting out there and the vision of this community that we were talking about. And a lot of people were coming to us and saying, I'm ready to buy a lot. I want to give you my money. I want to move this thing forward. I want to support the project. And at that point in time, we didn't really have a mechanism in place in order to be able to move forward with collectively creating the funding necessary to move forward with this community. And this is why we originally sat down with the lawyer. And at this stage of the game, what we've created, as I said, is Talking Trees Incorporated. So here's how it's going to work. Talking Trees Incorporated will be offering for sale lot shares. So the shares of the lots are broken down into three separate classes. As you've seen from the information we posted, there are three different lot sizes available. We have half-acre lots, we have one-acre lots, and we have one-and-a-half-acre lots. And these are all associated with what are called share classes. So as an example, a half-acre lot is a Class D share, a one-acre lot is a Class E share, and a one-and-a-half-acre lot is a Class F share. Those are really just technical details, but it's important to understand the different share classes as I move forward with the next part of the explanation. So each lot is broken down, or the value of each lot is broken down into 20% increments. In other words, a single share represents one-fifth or 20% interest in a total lot. And we did it this way for a couple of different reasons. The first one is we had a lot of people who said, okay, well, I'm not in a position to pay for a lot fully at this point in time, but I would love to be able to give a deposit. And looking at the deposit requirements or down payment requirements with conventional lenders in Canada, a minimum down payment is 20% for a conventional mortgage or an uninsured mortgage. And despite the fact that it is challenging to finance vacant land, you are, under certain circumstances, able to finance the construction of a home inclusive of the value of the lot. So in this way, we felt that we were achieving, primarily two things. The first one is allowing people to put money into the purchase of their lot incrementally over a certain period of time. And the second one is to align in order to make it convenient for those who might be considering in order to be able to move forward with the purchase and construction of their home. So just to go over it briefly again, each individual lot is broken down into five shares. Each share is representative of 20% of the value of the lot. In other words, it takes five shares of the same class to equal a single lot. So the next question typically is around the idea of what do I do with my shares and how do I use my shares to pay for my lot. So the way that it will work is once the lot share sales have reached a point where we are able to move forward with the purchase of parcel of land that we're targeting, we will be working together with the municipality in order to do the plan of subdivision. And what that means for those who are not familiar in the development industry is that the plan of subdivision is when we work with the municipality to identify and create the individual lot parcels that will be transferred to each purchaser at the time of closing. So in that way, each individual person will receive what's called a PIN. So for those of you who are in the real estate industry and the development industry will be familiar with that term, but it's a property identification number. And this is what the township will use in their system in order to be able to identify each individual. So I hope I'm not getting into too much technical detail here, but still pretty easy to understand. So at the time that that is completed, the individual parcel will exist, and then Talking Trees Investments will be in a position to transfer title of the individual lot to the purchaser. At that point in time, the purchaser redeems their shares in exchange for the lot. And at that point, the shares don't exist in that way any longer. The individual purchaser is no longer a shareholder, and now they have possession of their lot. So that's a quick explanation on how the corporation works. There's a lot of other more detailed questions about certain aspects of the corporation, and we're going to go through those very, very shortly, and we're going to be answering those questions as we move through. I think it would be valuable for those who are listening who have not been following us for as long and who may not understand specifically the idea that we're sharing about how the community might operate using a contribution-based system. So I think if we take a few minutes and we talk about perhaps what does that look like in the community, what does that really mean?
What does that mean, Steve? It's a thing, you know, we have to ask ourselves. Like, a contribution-based system is basically a lot of community projects that are driven by the community for the benefit of the community. And the community projects are basically established with the consent of all the members in the community to see what we need the most. For sure, the things we need the most are shelter, food, water, but a lot of the things that we need as human are already taken care of by the Earthship because they're such great building with the six principles. So the six principles of the Earthship will need to come back to them, and David will go in depth about what are the six principles, but basically the Earthships take care of you. But after that, we want more things to be actually living a luxurious life in the forest. Luxurious, I don't mean the big car and the big mansion. That's not what we really need. We need actually product that we need to live that are like honey, maple syrup, but that need actually work to be done. We need beautiful chairs, beautiful spoon, beautiful bowl, beautiful beehives that we'll design for our bees, beautiful earth ships that we're already in the plan of creating. So ultimately, everything that we want to create in the community will be a community project. So for sure now, we have three main community projects that we have all in mind, all in look for the community. It's a wood workshop, a metal workshop, and a recycling facility that we built to create goods out of garbage, literally. Because garbage is literally a word that we invented in our society because we're not able to take care of our byproduct. And with those byproducts, we can actually use them in another way to make other things. But these are just some community projects that will be available in the community. Right now we have as well a bee project started, which is a thing. We have New Life Tie-Dye, which we are in the work of making that a full community project, so everybody will be able to contribute within that. And we have the backcountry camping, which will be another community project, which will involve a lot more people. So if you look at all these community projects, what we're looking for is people who live in the community to work in those, which makes the most sense because people live beside where they work, so they don't have to commute hours and hours to go and come back from work. They can go out of the Earthship in the morning, go and take a beautiful walk in the forest, and go to a workspace that they enjoy with people that they love, do the thing that they enjoy all the days, follow their passion, and then come back to their household a couple hours later after achieving their labor of love, and then go again, do another thing that they prefer to do in the community, or not, just stay in the Earthship and enjoy the beautiful warmth of the Earthship because they achieved their contribution for the day. And we want to see hundreds of people like that contributing on a daily basis for the benefit of all of the community. And I think that's a bit, I guess, a vision of how the contribution-based system will work. But there's much more than that we need to talk about, because now we operate under an economic system, and the economic system doesn't address human needs, it addresses the needs of corporations. And this is what we don't really want to support. Now we're using that construct because we have to, but ultimately that's not the thing that we prefer. We would prefer a world where we abide by natural laws and universal laws, but not human-made laws. So ultimately, that's not the real point. Let's talk about the community project again. So
I think if I could just add something for a moment. The one thing that's important for people listening to understand is when we identify community projects, so for example, Precious Plastics was one of the ones that Chris mentioned. So this is an on-site, small-scale, localized, decentralized plastics recycling operation. And there might be people who think about that and really get excited about it. And this is something I really want to get involved in this. And then there'll be other people who will not feel the same way about that. And in the important thing to understand is that even in a project like that, if hands-on type of work in that project or even physical labor in general is challenging for a person, for whatever reason it happens to be, there are many other ways that you can contribute to any of the projects that are going on. So when we start looking at projects that we are wanting to introduce and ultimately launch in the community, we're identifying the full range of skills, I guess, that are required in order to be able to make this each project successful and have it get started. So, and the other thing to understand also is that you're not obligated to participate in the contribution-based system at all. It's purely by choice. This is not a mandatory thing. However, it does offer a pretty huge array of benefits to the community if we have, you know, more people in the community contributing themselves.
Yep.
So, David, is there anything you'd like to add?
I think you guys did pretty good, but as far as contributionism goes in the community, I don't really know how it's going to work, but I know that if people have the tools, facilities, equipment, support in whatever form to go out and build, create an idea they dreamt of, they had the day before, it really opens up a way of living that I don't even think we can imagine right now. I know I've had many dreams or thoughts or inspirations for things I'd like to build and didn't have the finances or didn't have the equipment or the people or support, and so they're just ideas still. But in a community, with all this community project infrastructure that's there, these ideas can literally become reality the next day. And I guess dreaming an idea and then building it or creating it the next day is a very powerful concept for me, that the community projects, the people there have to offer.
That's what working together do, man.
Great. Thank you so much, guys. So at this point in time, we've kind of given everyone a pretty good understanding of where we're at. And I think it might be valuable for people to understand where we're going. What's next? So with respect to the lot share sales, the process as it unfolds over the next few weeks is going to work like this. After today's program, we're going to publish a complete list of questions and answers that were discussed on today's program. And then there's going to be a registration page for people who are interested in getting more information about how to move forward with purchasing lot shares. At that point in time, those people will receive the necessary documentation on behalf of the corporation in order to understand what it means to buy lot shares in this type of a corporation. And sometime 3 to 4 weeks after that, so I guess we're targeting the third-ish week of December at this point in time, we will be hosting our very first presentation. And people who are interested in attending, after reviewing the information that they're able to get after today's program, will have an opportunity to purchase their lot shares. So we're very, very close to being able to move forward with this. So I think that pretty well encapsulates the information that we wanted to share. If I've missed anything, please let me know. Okay, getting thumbs up all the way around. Good. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a very brief intermission, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. It's just going to be dead air, folks, unfortunately, for the time being. But when we come back, we're going to take some time and we're going to go over the list of questions that we have received through submission by individuals prior to today's program. So we'll be back in just 2 minutes. And we're back. So thank you very much. I hope everybody had enough time to do whatever it is that you chose to do during that brief intermission. And thank you again for your patience. So we're going to move along right now into the list of questions that we have received. So the link that we posted on the Facebook page went to a website called SurveyMonkey, and SurveyMonkey is very beneficial for us in the way that it collects and collates the questions. So we really appreciate people taking the time to use that method to submit questions. Once we get through this list of questions, as I said, we're going to open up the phone lines and people will have an opportunity to call in. We're also going to launch the chat window live on the call, and as well, if you'd like, you can submit additional questions through Facebook Messenger. So we're hoping that that is a sufficient number of alternatives for people to be able to submit your questions. So the first question that we have on the list here, and these are not in any particular order, and some of them are a little bit repetitive. So if we have questions that are repeated, then I'm just simply going to skip the questions. But the first question that we're going to cover is, can I use my bank to buy land and build an earthship? So I guess the short answer to the question is technically, yes, you can. That's going to really depend on the relationship that you have with your bank. So it's not up to us to say whether or not people would qualify for a mortgage or anything like that on this type of a build. But certainly we would be happy to work together with any purchasers, whatever information was required in order to satisfy the requirements of a financial institution for somebody who is seeking financing in that way. Okay. Next question is, what is the cost of a half acre lot? And this is a question we've been getting an awful lot. And at this point in time, I think I'm going to turn the mic over to David and we can roll out the official lot prices that we're moving forward with in the community.
Well, thank you, Steve. So over the 7 years, there's been the lot prices have fluctuated depending on the grandness of the vision or the cost of the land. But about 6 years ago, I said I really hope to sell a half acre for $15,000. That's still the hope. And because of the kind of project we're working on, there are people, groups, always interested, contacting us, having conversations that might want to support a project like this, and that will affect the cost of the lots. As of right now, the lots need to support the purchase of the land, the development, the roads, walking paths, and a certain number of community projects to make this community more than just another off-grid community. It's really the community projects that make this special, amongst a whole bunch of other things, but really the community project. So as of right now, the lot prices are $22,000 for a half an acre, $44,000 for 1 acre, and $66,000 for 1.5 acres. If support does come in the future at any point, anybody who purchased their lot for those prices, should it go down, would get a refund for the new lot price. I can't think of a development or a company or anybody else that has ever done anything like that, but this is not like any other development that has ever existed either. So that's what we're working with right now. As soon as if we do get news like that, everybody will be advised so that they know the new prices. But this is the prices we're working with right now to be able to create what we believe we need to create for this community to be as successful as it can be.
That's excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, David. I'm actually going to leave you with the mic for the next question. The next question that we have is, where is the best place to go to get accurate ideas of earthship building costs, including plans?
That's a wonderful question. I don't know if there is a good place at this point. I don't want to speak for Earthship Biotexture, but I believe they're average cost for a turnkey home is about $200 a square foot. I believe with contributionism and the way this community is going to function and the way I've seen the development of it function up to this point, that a nice studio-based model would probably start at about $144 a square foot. Now, the simple survivals have much simpler systems than the studio or any model beyond that, so they would be cheaper. And I'm talking $144 a square foot is a very nicely finished earthship. You're not going to have gold tiles and granite countertops, but you're also welcome to do that too. But I think $144 a square foot is a good price to base your estimation off of if you're trying to figure out what your home is going to cost.
I think that brings up another question, though. That brings up the model that Talking Trees have created itself, because you're talking about the simple survival, the studio. So Earthship, Talking Trees itself has created Earthship models that are redesigned for the northern climate. And you have a couple designed already named and of different size. Can you develop on that a bit?
Yeah, So Taos, New Mexico, where Michael Reynolds has been developing the Earthship with his team for the last 40 years, they've done amazing work. Like Michael said, you know, he equates it to being trapped in a subway cave-in, and he saw a little pin of light and started moving the rocks, and some people came and started helping him, and things are getting brighter. So what we've done up here, even though Taos is a very similar, has very similar weather, they're at about 6,000 feet elevation, they don't get sustained cold winters like we do. They don't get the humidity like we do in the summer. So this building is going to be adapted and evolved for whatever climate it's in, and we have started to make modifications to better suit it for the northern climate. And just like them, it's going to be trial and error. The building is constantly going to evolve. We're constantly going to learn things. And a studio model, like I said, I wouldn't want to put a studio model for $144 is just a good base price to start at. You can get much simpler, especially if you go to the something like a Simple Survival, but our modifications haven't really affected the cost compared to Earthship Bio.
Thank you so much for that explanation, and I will share as well on our website at talkingtrees.love, there is a page there where you can go and review the Northern Climate Earthship and the modifications that David was speaking about. So I would encourage people definitely to take a look there. Thank you so much, David. I guess at this time, that question also brings up another question, so I'm going to go a little bit out of order here. And one of the questions, there was two particular questions that relate to what David spoke about. So the first one is, do I have to build an Earthship home? And the second question was, do I have to use talking trees to build my Earthship home? So I'm going to turn the mic over to David again and let him answer those two questions. So first question, David, does it need to be an Earthship?
No, I guess the Earthship is a name most people are familiar with. It's the one I'm most familiar with. What these homes really need to focus on is the six principles of the Earthship. It doesn't need to be an Earthship as long as it has the six principles. And the reason these are really the only guidelines for the community is because we're not running infrastructure through the forest in North Frontenac. Each building needs to be able to heat itself, cool itself, should be made with natural and recycled materials, it needs to generate its own power, it needs to collect and treat its own water, it should be able to grow its own food. The only services that will be coming into the community is hardline internet and phone. Other than that, your building will have to be able to do everything itself. So it's not you need to build an Earthship, it needs to have the six principles for a human being to be comfortable.
That's great. Thanks so much. So the second question was, does a purchaser obligated to use talking trees in the construction of their home?
Hell no. You guys, I've helped a few people with portions of their ship. The tires might be difficult for some people. Some people might just want to do the glass bottle walls and leave the rest up to us. They might want to hire somebody else to do it. We are happy to advise, to support anybody that wants to do it themselves, that wants to hire somebody else. We're also happy to participate in your build from everything from a little bit of advice to a turnkey house. So it's really up to each individual to decide how they'd like to proceed with their building, as long as it functions on the six principles.
That's great. Thank you so much, David. The next question that we have on the list is, what is the procedure to purchase a lot? So I went over this briefly, well, maybe not briefly, it was in quite a bit of detail, I guess, earlier in the program. So just to recap again, no one is purchasing a lot at this point in time. The procedure to get to the ownership of a lot is to purchase lot shares. And at the time that Talking Trees Investments is in a position to transfer title of the individual lot, you would redeem your lot shares for the ownership of your lot. Now, this also brings up a question in my mind that some people might be asking. And that question is, well, do I need to buy lot shares equivalent to the total value of a lot prior to the time at which title is ready to be transferred? And the answer to that question, again, is no. If you are interested in putting a deposit on a lot, and at the time of closing, when we're in a position to transfer title, then you can simply redeem whatever shares you have. So if it's single share is 20%, two shares is 40%, and so on, you can redeem those shares, and then balance can be paid off in cash. in this way, if someone is financing their build, then the money typically is released at certain increments. And depending on what the arrangement is with the lending institution, they would simply just issue the fund that was required in order to be able to close the property. And then we move on to the next phase, which is the construction of the home. The next question is, can we choose our lot will be, or can we choose where our lot will be or who it will be next to? So this is kind of an interesting question. It's, to me, it's two questions. So the first one is, can we choose our lot? Well, absolutely, of course, you can choose your lot. And as everyone is fully aware, there is not an unlimited number of lots available. Number of lots that we can work with, given the size of the property, the topography, and the way that we would like to see the community laid out to make it function the best. The next question is, the second part of that question, I guess, would be, can we choose who it will be next to? And that's definitely something that we cannot do. Certainly, from a privacy perspective, we're not in a position to be disclosing to anyone who the owner of the lot beside you is if you're considering purchasing it. So much in the same way as any conventional real estate transaction, you know, if you go into a regular subdivision or neighborhood or even into a high-rise condo, you're not provided with information on who the people are who are living beside you. But I think as the community grows and as we move closer to the point in time where we're going to be doing lot transfers, all of our purchasers are going to know one another before we get to that stage, because it simply makes sense for it to work in that way. And we're going to be having meetings, there's going to be discussions that are going on, and you know, you guys are all going to get to know each other. Not that I'm suggesting that you would be basing where your lot is simply on the person who's living beside you, but these people, by the time that this community, the lots start to close, we're all going to be neighbors already. We're all going to know each other at that point in time. So I hope that that addresses that question specifically. So the next question, again, is going to go to David. And this one is there a risk of water damage occurring inside an earthship?
Yes and no, but yes. There can be, you know, it has plumbing. It's a house. There can be water damage in any home. I feel like maybe that question might have been missing a word. The property we're looking at is well above any of the five lakes that are located at the edges, so there's no possibility of flooding in the community unless it's an apocalyptic style flood. But the earthship itself is an incredibly watertight building, much better than any conventional building I've been a part of in 22 years in construction. You're running water through the building, but I mean, Michael Reynolds has been working on this design for 40 years, and yes, the six principles have only been around the last 15 or 20 years, but they've really honed how this works. And even though it'll keep evolving, there's not the, we're not going to have mistakes or lessons that Earthship Bio learned. They learned how to make the gray water not smell. They've learned to put the cisterns outside in most cases rather than inside the buildings where they started out. So I don't see any possibility other than, you know, a plumbing fitting coming loose of water damage being anything you have to worry about in an Earthship.
I think one question that comes to my mind that's related to this, David, is, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet about Earthships and experiences that people have had with Earthships. And there are people who have attempted Earthship builds on their own, and to what I've seen, have ventured outside of the way that the home needs to operate in order to function properly. And as a result of that, they've had moisture issues inside the home as a result of it not being ventilated properly. So could you speak to that for a moment?
Well, especially with Earthships, I guess, but with any conventional house, you want to know what you're doing. These houses are designed, these homes are designed to be as simple as possible, but I am not going to walk into Apple or IBM or anybody else like that and just start building a computer or programming a computer because I've seen a couple of YouTube videos they are simple homes, but I mean, I have 22 years practice at building homes, and they can still catch me here and there. I'm still, you know, always learning things. That's why it's going to be great that we're able to be there, if only for support or for questions for those people who are attempting or who are going to be building their own homes. They're going to have support and someone right there, like most people don't have. And these tiny lessons that someone might learn doing it for the first time have been learned by those who are doing it for the 10th, 20th, 100th time. So we really shouldn't run into many challenges like that, but there's always going to be challenges.
That's great. Thank you so much. The next question that we have on the list is, how does this differ from a regular real estate project? So I'll field that question. I spent 25 years, yes, a quarter of a century, in the building and development and real estate sales industry in Toronto, in the Greater Toronto area. And in my experience, I've seen the birth of many projects right from it being a concept or an idea all the way through until people are moving into their homes. And, you know, these are all conventional real estate developments. So how does this differ? We look at a conventional real estate model, and what happens is a developer will go out and they'll purchase a parcel of land. Typically, they'll borrow money to do that, but not in all cases. And once they own the parcel of land, they'll work together with the municipality to create a draft plan of subdivision and then a finalized plan of subdivision, which gets approved. And then they go through once all the lot severances are done, they will move in and they'll start constructing on the land. They'll start building the homes. And when your home is done, on closing, title is transferred to you, which includes the land and the home. And at that time, the purchaser pays for their home and the builder walks away from the project with the exception of any warranty obligations that they have. So the biggest difference in this way versus a conventional development is that the people who are the ones who are going to be living in the community ultimately fund the purchase of the parcel of land and the associated costs with the development company in order to bring it to a stage where title can be transferred to each individual purchaser. So I would say in this way, the people who are going to live in the community are the ones that are involved in creating it from the very first step. And in a conventional real estate project, it's just simply not the case. The next question that we have is, where did the land come from? Well, it was there when we got there.
Yep.
It's an interesting story, and I'm only going to give a very little bit of information here because, of course, we have privacy concerns that we need to respect. And we intend to do that. So the land itself was brought to us. We were approached at a presentation that was done, spring of last year by an individual in North Frontenac who was very aligned with what we are attempting to do and felt that the parcel of land that was that he had would be beneficial or be well-suited to the construction of what we're trying to do. And now it's important to understand that wasn't the only parcel of land that we looked at, and it's still not necessarily the only parcel of land that we are looking at. But at this point in time, out of everything that we've seen and all the conversations that we've had, this seems like the best option that's available at this moment in time. And when I say the best option, I mean it's literally perfectly suited to what we want to do. So there's no reason for us necessarily to look anywhere else. So I hope that addresses that particular question. The next question I find quite interesting, and I'm curious to see how I'm going to leave this one open for anybody to take on if they want to. But the question is, have you counseled with local Forest Nations elders? I guess the short answer to the question is no. But to me, the elders of the forests are the trees that live there. And in the time that we've spent on not only this, but all of the other properties, we have set a clear intention to be able to have whatever connection we can with the land to understand if the land is suitable for what we want to do. So in that way, my feeling is the answer to the question would absolutely be yes. If anybody else has another answer they'd like to share, please feel free and go ahead.
I would just say a bit of the reason why we're doing that is not to go in the forest and just have a comfortable life in the center of the forest. We're going there to be steward of that forest. The cut we'll be cutting, we'll be drying them and using them for the benefit of the community, building house, building the community center, building workshops. And after that, there will be a lot of replanting and permaculture happening all over the community. So this land will be loved and taken care of, like none other land around this one. So it's not about, like, we'll be talking with nature itself and the elder of the forest, the old trees that are there. And, like, that's why we're called Talking Trees. We're connecting with the trees themselves before doing anything with them and connecting with the nature and the environment. So yeah, like, that's my view on the question, I guess.
Beautiful.
Yeah, you guys are beautiful. That's good.
Thank you so much. So, continuing on with the list of questions. Does the price include surveys and marking of the property borders? So, the simplest way to answer this question is, the price of the lot includes everything that is required for Talking Trees Investments to be in a position to transfer legal title to each individual purchaser. So surveys will be done, yes. As far as marking borders is concerned, whatever marking is required is left up to the survey company. So I hope that addresses the question. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, that sounds good.
Okay. Where is the land? So either of you that would like to take on that question, feel free.
Well, the land, like Steve said,
Senator.
We have to respect privacy, and we don't own the land for the community yet. However, people and the landscape of the area of North Frontenac is where we're focused right now. A year ago, we didn't know where it would be, or a year and a half ago, we had no idea. We were looking all over the place. I actually looked in completely different places, and that's what's actually led us to North Frontenac now. So the property will most likely be in North Frontenac. I can't say where yet because we don't own it. I will say that it's going to be a beautiful piece of property, as is most of North Frontenac. It will have access lakes, no matter where the property we end up is. And other than that, at the moment, until a few more people buy lots and we actually have the land, I can't say much more about where the land is other than North Frontenac.
Thank you. I think this would be a good time. I'm just going to collectively bang off a bunch of questions here. And the reason that I'm going to do that is we're down to 40 minutes left on the call. And I'm going to make a proposal here, I guess. If we do end up running out of time, because we haven't even rolled into phone calls yet, and I know there's a lot of people that are really interested and really want to connect with us. So what I'm going to propose is that if we do end up running out of time, then we're going to relaunch again just after this, and we'll start a second show. And what that'll mean is you'll have to give us maybe 5-10 minutes in order to set that up, and you'll just need to stay on the same page that you're on now. We'll just roll right into part two of this broadcast. So I don't want anyone to feel any concern for the fact that they might not be able to get through with their questions, because we will definitely work to try and accommodate everybody. So as David mentioned, with respect to the land, it's important for us to mention that we do intend to have some type of a ability for people to be able to see the property, but we have to work together with the property owner to ensure that everybody is comfortable with whatever the arrangement is. So that the ability to walk the land and see, like David said, the beauty of the land, the lakes, all that sort of stuff is definitely something that we are working on, and we're hoping to host that very, very soon. So we'll just have to ask for a little bit of patience and for you guys to sort of stay with us while we work on that. We had a quick question here about legal fees. So the question is, David, I'll let David answer the property tax question here. But one of the questions is, where can we get info regarding building costs, including legal fees? And David went over building costs briefly. Legal fees are something which is kind of interesting. And I can tell you again, from my 25 years in the business, legal fees are different from every lawyer that you go to. So as far as the costs that are typically associated with a real estate transaction, the rule of thumb that any realtor will tell you is that you set aside 3% of the total value of the home. And in most cases, it's not a build. It's a home that's already built on a lot, and that will cover your legal costs. Now, That includes things like land transfer tax and so on. So the only recommendation that I can really make in order for people to have the most accurate information possible is to select a real estate lawyer in the area that you would like to work with, call them, and ask them those questions. There was a quick question here about the shares for the corporation, and it's somewhat relevant, and we'll go into greater detail with this at the presentation that we're going to have in mid-December. The question was, are these voting or non-voting shares? And as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast and also in the information we put out, this is not a typical corporation. Our corporation is modeled after a corporation which is commonly referred to as a mortgage investment corporation, but it's only similar in nature. It's totally different in terms of the way that we're using it. So the answer to the question is, as a result of the unique type of corporation that we're operating under, they're actually both. It's both voting and non-voting shares. And as we get a little bit further into the evolution of this, like I said, at our presentation, we will be directly addressing what the difference between those different share types is. Question we have here is with respect to the six ownership principles being allowed in North Frontenac County. And if you have anything other than yes to add to that, David, feel free to do so.
Oh, other than yes? No, I don't. I am under the impression that all six principles are completely allowed and supported in North Frontenac.
And this is based on discussions that we've had with their building department. Just so everyone's aware that, you know, we have had meetings with the planners in North Frontenac and with their building department in order to ensure that the vision that we're bringing forward is something that works in that location. So thank you again for that great question. So topographical maps available. Yes, topographical maps will be available at some point in time. We don't have anything that we're able to share with you at this point in time. Next question is a really good one. What restrictions will be in place for buying land, starting a build, and completing the build? So as far as buying the land is concerned, I'm going to redirect that back to my previous comment. No one is purchasing land at this point in time. You're purchasing lot shares, and in that way, there are no restrictions per se, but there are particular ways individuals must qualify under the corporation guidelines. And this is comes from the Government of Canada. It has nothing to do with Talking Trees Investments as to how you purchase shares in the corporation. So that information will be shared, as I said, at our presentation. And the next part of that question is what percent. Oh, sorry, I lost my spot. Bear with me for a quick second. Building and completing the build. So the way that the it's structured at this point in time, from the time that the individual purchaser receives title to their lot, they need to begin construction on their home within a 12-month period. And after that has started, there's a 24-month period for them to complete their home. Now, this gives an overall window for construction of 3 years, but it's important for everyone to understand that the reason that that exists in the paperwork is just simply because some form of guideline needs to exist. We're not in the interest, we're not interested in having a community that's full of unbuilt lots, but we also understand that moving into a community like this for a lot of people is a transition, and it does take time, and there are certain things and circumstances that need to fall into place correctly in order for that to happen. So despite the fact that the paperwork does give a total 3-year timeline, and again, it's 1 year to start construction and 2 years to finish, we're open to working together with individuals on a case-by-case basis should they not be able to operate within those timelines. We have a question here about a satellite view. So again, same thing. The image that we have posted on Facebook is a satellite image of the property that we're currently targeting and the one that we're discussing right now. We don't have anything other than that that we can share at this point in time. Next question is visit the location. Yes, we are going to be arranging that. How soon do you anticipate living on site? So I think this question means if I purchase lot shares and ultimately redeem those for a lot, how soon could it be expected that I'll be living in my home? Now, I don't have a crystal ball. And if anybody else does, then, you know, please feel free to share the information. The way that the timing looks at this point is that here we are on, say, mid-November. We're going to be proceeding with people having the ability to purchase lot shares by mid-December. And at that point in time, we will start looking at moving on the property. We need a certain amount of time to close the property, which is a minimum of 2 weeks, but that's going to be happening in and around the holidays. So let's safely say a month. So that puts us 2 months ahead of where we are today. At that point in time, then we, our planner, the surveyors, will start working together with the County of North Frontenac in order to develop and finalize the plan of subdivision, at which point then we could be looking at transferring title of the individual lots as early as end of summer, fall of 2019. So I hope that addresses the question accurately. If it doesn't, then please feel free to send us a message through Facebook and we'll try to do better answering that question. Timelines are an interesting thing because there are so many things that are outside of the control of anybody present at this moment that can directly affect that. Weather is one, for example. So I hope that addresses that question. So the next question is, how much is a half acre lot in the Earthship? David addressed that question already. The next question is also related to lots. The next question is, how much is the largest parcel, which was already addressed? So it's 66,000 for a 1.5 acre lot. Is there a yearly or monthly fee? So as far as the community itself is concerned, I would say the answer to that question at this point is no, as far as a financial fee is concerned. But as we've been talking about, the community, the intention of this community is for it to operate under a contribution-based system. So not to say that there's a monthly fee, but it's our vision and our desire and our passion for as many people in the community to be contributing themselves in that way as possible. As far as other fees are concerned that might be with the municipality, for example, property taxes and so on, those would apply. And as far as the tax information is concerned, David gave a little bit of an estimate earlier. Or did I hand it over to you for that yet? I don't believe I did.
No.
Okay. So I'm going to actually pass the mic to David right now. We're going to talk a little bit about what property taxes might look like in North Frontenac.
Thank you, Steve. If I base the numbers off 2017 figures for North Frontenac, it's $675 per $100,000 for your property assessment. And again, that's completely up to the municipality. I think Steve said it really well. Contributionism, I have a hard time looking at it as a fee, but it is definitely encouraged. I can't imagine there will ever be any fee like a condo fee or anything like that in the community. Just because of the nature of contributionism, even something like your laneway being plowed in the winter will probably be a joy for someone to hop out of bed at 4 a.m. and hop into the community tractor or plow and drive through the forest and clear it for everybody in the morning. So I really don't see any type of fee in this community. It's just not necessary by design.
That's great. Thank you so much, David. The last question we have on our list is, when will people be able to buy a lot? And I addressed that a few moments ago. We're looking at mid-December, which we're going to host our first formal presentation where people will have the opportunity to purchase lot shares at that point in time. Now, we've had a few questions come in as the program has been underway. So we're going to go over to that list. And we're going to start with these questions. At that point in time, as I said, we're going to open up the phone lines and we're going to open up the chat window. And if we end up running out of time on this particular broadcast, then we'll relaunch in a very short period of time. So the first question that we received was, what has changed from the last discussion of Talking Trees, i.e. before we were selling raffle tickets and now we formed a corporation? So what has changed is we formed a corporation. We've been working very hard, as I said, over the last year since our previous broadcast, and there's been a lot of lessons that we've learned as a result of that. And the biggest change is that now we're happy to be able to formally announce that we are in a position to move forward with the creation of this community. Do people own their land, or does it remain under the ownership of the corporation? So this actually is a very good question. The individual lot that you will be receiving at title transfer, at least as far as the current construct of ownership exists in Canada, yes, you will own the lot. The balance of the community, so This means the lands which are outside of the boundaries of each individual lot parcel will be collectively owned. And this means that people in the community will have access to all of that space. I'm sure there'll be more questions about that in the future, and certainly we'll be providing more details. What happens if the corporation is sold or dissolved? Okay, so based on the way that the corporate documentation is set up, if something were to happen that required the sale of the corporation prior to the point at which we can transfer title of the lots to individual purchasers, whoever purchases the corporation would need to abide by the corporate documentation that was submitted when the corporation was formed. No changes can be made to that paperwork without the directors of the corporation voting on changes. So I don't really know if that answers the question specifically. The corporation ultimately will be dissolved, and it'll be dissolved at a point in the future when its existence is no longer required. And what I mean by that is the purpose of the Talking Trees Investments, yes, will be dissolved at the point in future when it's no longer required. And that will mean when we no longer require funding through that model in order to be able to move forward with any components of the community. But that's going to be quite some time in the future. And at that point in time, the corporation just simply wouldn't be required, so it doesn't make sense for it to exist. Who is responsible for road maintenance? The roads will be internal to the community, David. So I guess the short answer is that we'll be responsible for it, the community.
Yeah, I kind of just addressed that. I mean, Michael Tellinger likes to bring up the most common question he gets, which is who's going to shovel the shit? Who's going to clean it up? And there's always one or two people that are more than happy, especially when it comes to the community they live in and the people they see every day, who are happy to do it. And I'm not going to want to do it every night, but something tells me there's going to be a lot of nights where I wake up at 4 a.m. and hop out and can't wait to go plow the roads. And I'm sure there's lots of other people too. Just to expand a little on Steve's explanation of and common land, if we're looking at a community size of 278 acres, and there's 144 lots. Collectively, those 144 lots total 133.5 acres. So it leaves a little more than half of the property collectively owned. Someone brought up looking at the lot map that we have right now that it looks really tight and there's not a lot of space, but the consideration they need to take is that was done off of Google Earth and scale the best it could. So if you bring into the your head that half the land is going to be common, you can tell that the scale of the lots is not representative of what it will actually be. There will actually be much more space between the lots. This design of circular lots is supposed to allow for the natural flow of the forest, for the natural path for creatures to be able to go between the buildings. And it was also brought up about privacy if these lots are so close. If you live in any kind of development that's been done in the last 40 years, your neighbors are close, probably, unless you're on a big estate lot in the country. One of the nice things of many of the Airship is they all face south. So even if your neighbor is 100 feet away or 100 meters away, you can't see into their house. You have total privacy. The people behind you, all they can see is your beautiful berm growing food. In front of you, that's what you would be able to see of the Airship in front of you. So this building, along with this circular lot design, really gives you incredible privacy. At the same time, we don't want to spread lots out too far because recreational trailer parks have a really nice feel. You can walk to your neighbors. You can walk to the water. Everything is fairly close. And if we start giving too much privacy, it's going to be a long walk and people are going to want to switch to motorized vehicles or driving their car to one end of the community to the other. So we're trying to find a balance of the lot sizes and the buildings that will be going on them and the natural spaces that are left between them.
That's great. Thanks so much, David. The next question we have here is, if you buy shares, can you sell them back to the corporation or a third party if your situation changes? So the answer to that question is technically yes, although the corporation wouldn't necessarily be buying the shares back from you. You do have the ability, meaning that there is provision built into the current paperwork in order to address this particular thing. So the sale of shares going forward for those whose situation changes is something that we're definitely interested in sitting and working together with people on a case-by-case basis. And what I mean by that is we're not in the interest of trying to, you know, be heavy-handed with anybody as would happen in a conventional development. I mean, if you put a deposit on a home from a production builder and for whatever reason you're not able to close your home, your deposit is gone. You lose that. And in the event you're not able to negotiate something with them that's favorable to you, that money is lost. In addition to that, you expose yourself to a potential lawsuit for non-performance of a legal contract. And this is the way that the current development industry works. And this is something that we're not interested in at all. So we've had a lot of time spent in discussion with this particular point because we want people to be able to move forward with building their homes, changes in their situation. Will landowners be able to wait before building? If yes, how would it work? For example, volunteerism requirements, etc. So we did address the question as far as building timelines are concerned. And in the case of somebody who has people who are assisting them to build their home in a volunteer capacity, that can also extend the timeline considerably because you may not be able to get access to volunteers at the same time. And do your volunteers want to come out and work in at the end of November in North Frontenac and so on, right? So definitely something that we're willing to work to accommodate for each individual person. Does 22% off the building cost happen only if 5 shares for a piece of land, or can this happen if I were first to buy 1 share? So this is a good time for us to tell everybody about the incentive that we're offering. So I'm going to hand the mic over to David. It has been posted on a couple of spots. And for those who were savvy enough to do some digging, the information is out there. But Talking Trees is offering a 22% discount off all building costs for any work that's done through Talking Trees. So I'll hand it over to David.
Thanks, Steve. The whole, a huge part of the purpose of this conversation is to explain the overall vision of the community and how we get there. Having the Mortgage Investment Corporation sorted out, the next step is the land. And I can't think of a better way to buy the land than the people who are actually going to be living there, building there, creating their lives there and their home there, being the ones that work together to purchase the land. So the land that we're currently looking at, if 22 half-acre lots are sold at $22,000, that purchases the land. So that was that's where I got the figure of 22 lots. Once we get there, like I said, if the lot prices end up coming down, those people will get refunds. The 22% off the construction will apply to any construction Talking Trees does. It doesn't matter if it's an airship or your laneway or whatever it may be. But hopefully this is incentive for the first 22 people to come out, to get together. Now their building costs are cheaper by 22%, and purchase this land, which has been one of the biggest challenges of this project to date. Now there is suitable land in North Frontenac. We're having this conversation, so I hope this helps move it along a little, helps ease. I know money is always a consideration, so hopefully this really helps people be able to put in their share for the lots and know that they'll save it when it comes to the time of building their home.
That's great. Thank you so much, David. So at this time, we've concluded with all of the questions that have been submitted. Looking at the time that's remaining on this program, we have 17 minutes left. I can say for certain that's not going to be enough time. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to end this broadcast. We're going to set up a new broadcast, which we'll launch as early as we can possibly get it to launch. And based on the service that we're using, which is Blog Talk Radio, we will be able to launch the next broadcast at 1 p.m. So at least by 1 p.m., if not the next increment that's available to us after that, which I'm not mistaken, is 1:20, we'll be relaunching another one-hour program in order to be able to address phone calls from those who have questions. So at this time, I would like to thank everyone who is listening to today's program for being here with us, and we look forward to speaking to you guys soon. Thank you so much.